Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. Hi, guys. This is Lydia Wente, the Lifestyle Coach, and so excited for our interview today. I am such a fan of this woman. I first heard her on a podcast, and just the few suggestions that she gave there were really life-changing for me. Like, in my journey of just health and happiness and body acceptance and eating well, of like all sorts of different things. So it's really awesome that we have her on the show today, and we're just gonna have a really great conversation. So I'm gonna introduce her a little bit. Today we have Isabel Foxen-Duke on with us. She is the creator of Stop Fighting Food, which is a free video training program for women who want to stop feeling crazy around food. Does that sound familiar to any of you? After years of trying to overcome emotional eating and binge eating, chronic weight cycling through traditional and alternative approaches, Isabel discovered some radical new ways to get women over their food issues once and for all, not just by shifting the mindsets of individuals, but by challenging the dominant diet culture as a whole. So her writing and free guide, How to Not Eat Cake, can be found at IsabelFoxenDuke.com, and I'll include links for more of her stuff in the show notes, so don't worry about frantically writing notes, just sit back and enjoy. She also has a free video training series at StopFightingFood.com, and as you can tell just from her bio, like how applicable she is to what we do here with Life with Lydia, about just, you know, getting rid of the food craziness and moving on with our lives and that direct approach. And so excited to hear her insight. And we're just going to have a super fun conversation. So, hello, how are you? Welcome to the show, Isabel.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
Yes, very, very fun. Okay, so I always like to start out with just hearing a little bit about like your story. So tell us a little bit about like your journey through the frolicking, wonderful diet world and like kind of how you got to where you are now, why you do what you do. Would love to hear just in your words, your journey.
So, I often start the story by telling women I started dieting when I was 3 years old. That was when I was put on my first diet by my pediatrician. So I don't really have any memories. I don't have any conscious memories of not dieting, of not being affected by sort of external messages around food outside of just my natural, innate, you know, born instincts. From a very, very young age, I essentially was in the diet binge cycle. I mean, I was constantly trying to control my food or having my food controlled for me when I was super young by my parents, and constantly on the flip side, like looking for food and trying to get food whenever I could, and essentially effectively like binge eating, reacting to deprivation, like trying to find, trying to get this like tantalizing seductive substance that was sort of off limits. And so that was my life for most of my life. By the time I was probably 10, I was so young that I was sort of first told that my body was not okay the way it was. So at an incredibly young age, I was very aware that my body was not okay. It was too big. I should be constantly worrying about trying to make it smaller. And I always was trying to make it smaller. And by the age of 10 years old, I was already engaged in pretty actively eating disordered behaviors, which led me all the way through until the age of 19, and really beyond. But 19 was sort of a big hitting point. That was when I ended up in rehab. But what was effectively happening between that time, right, between sort of picking up these more aggressive disordered eating habits and the time that I went to rehab was that I didn't lose weight. I actually gained weight substantially over the period of time. Sometimes I would lose weight, but then I would just gain it back and more some, you know, and more. I was doing what I think a lot of just American women and just women increasingly all over the world are doing, and they don't really know how to get out of it because they're kind of being told to do this, which is, you know, restrict, try to lose weight, restrict your food, try to lose weight. And then of course for Belle and, you know, any weight loss that may have happened kind of goes out the window and then some. This is what I call weight cycling, right? So I weight cycled pretty much my whole life until I was 19. When I was 19, I ended up in rehab because I had gotten to the point where I was so sort of desperate to try and lose weight that I started using stimulant medication to try and control my appetite. And that got me into rehab pretty fast. That was sort of like the darkest time of my sort of disordered eating history, was desperately trying to control my binges through drugs, basically. Went to rehab for binge eating disorder, was in inpatient rehab for binge eating disorder for several months. And that was sort of where the journey really began. And I got so many different kinds of mixed messages when I was in rehab. One of the things that was really interesting about being thrown into the sort of clinical treatment system was that I realized, like, there's actually a lot of disagreement in the clinical treatment system as to how to deal with binge eating. There's actually not a ton of uniform advice. Lots of people have different perspectives on how to treat binge eating, basically. So I had some people telling me, you're a food addict, you were born this way, it's like, you know, like an alcoholic, like you can, you know, once you become a pickle, you can never be a cucumber, you're sort of screwed for life, and your best chance at hell is to just go to Overeaters Anonymous meetings and like stick to a rigid meal plan and just sort of like pray to God to not be able to break your meal plan. And on the flip side, I had sort of people who were teaching intuitive eating and teaching legalization and allowance and sort of the non-diet approach. The non-diet approach was inherently more scary to me as a disordered eater, right? It was inherently more terrifying. There was a big part of me, the disordered part of me, really wanted to just be handed a meal plan and told what to eat. And so I stayed sort of, you know, I kind of bounced, but of course, I mean, ultimately what ended up happening when I was sort of took the, you know, the hardcore rigid meal plan food addict route was that for years and years, I tried to resolve my binge eating through that sort of method. And I just literally couldn't do it. I mean, I would string, it would be just like my diet binge cycling. I would string some days together. I'd be like, yes, I stuck to my meal plan. I didn't binge this week or, you know, this day. And then of course I would fall off the wagon, and it was literally just mirrored what I was doing with traditional dieting. And so at some point I realized, like, oh, this like rigid meal plan sort of food addiction, like I got to cut out these foods, or, you know, the answer is in changing my food, basically. I realized at some point that that wasn't going to work, and I was going to have to really make peace with my body and my food the way it was, and sort of, you know, embrace a more intuitive approach to eating, understanding that that meant accepting that my food wasn't going to be perfect all the time, and really living in acceptance of my, you know, food the way it was, and sort of making peace with that. And what ended up happening ultimately was that as I, you know, sort of moved deeper into acceptance around my food the way it was, even when it didn't look the way I wanted it to look, my binging decreased. You know, my emotional dependence on food decreased. And I started to research that and look into that in my professional, you know, as my professional life went on, and I realized, like, oh, this is actually, there's a reason for this. It is actually the restriction and the deprivation and the self-control and that restraint, right? That desire to control our food that actually is the fuel for rebellious binge eating and emotional eating. And we'll talk about the difference between those two things in a moment. And I realized the more I tried to control my food, the more I tried to treat my binge eating through willpower and restraint, the more intense the binges were. And the more I let go, the more I surrendered really, truly emotionally, which is, I think many people say they are letting go with food, but they don't actually, or they're not actually letting go with food. They're just binging, basically. They're just binging and wishing that their food looked different, but they're not living in true emotional acceptance of their food. When we live in true emotional acceptance of our food, like, food loses its power over us, right? And so that is that sort of emotional part, right? That emotional mind transitioning around acceptance and the non-diet approach is really the focus of my coaching practice today. You know, it's intuitive eating and beyond. It's the mental and emotional changes. It's even maybe the spiritual changes that need to take place in order for quote unquote normal eating to occur.
Awesome. Awesome. You have a beautiful story. And there was so much there. I was like writing notes and I would love to just like dive into different pieces. Okay. So let's back up to, you were talking about like deprivation leading to binge eating. Tell us a little bit more about that. Like why is that? Can you tell us a little bit about the mechanisms, like in your world, like what you teach about why that deprivation and binge eating are so related?
So there's a lot of different reasons why deprivation and binge eating are related. The first is the most obvious and is the most well understood and the most well known, which is just physical deprivation, right? Like if you are hungry, if you are not satisfying your actual physical urges, which are different from person to person and will never actually be known by a meal plan or a diet or an external written piece of paper, right? If you're not satisfying your physical hungers, biologically, your instincts are going to take over and you are going to get those calories at some point. So like if you are depriving yourself of food or nutrients in some capacity, physically speaking, it is only a matter of time before your biological instincts take over. You lose your resolve or your willpower cracks, which really just means your biological instincts are stronger than your willpower, which is, thank God, honestly. And you're going to just break and sort of like fall into, you're going to get the food you need physically, right? At some point. Now, that being said, physical restrictions, right? Or physical deprivation, while most people sort of understand that to be a cause of binge eating, in my experience and in the work with most of my clients, it really only accounts for like, it's only like 10% of the problem. What ends up happening beyond that, right? So like after you satisfy your physical needs for food, what ends up happening is that when you emotionally deprive yourself of food, meaning one of two things. Well, let's talk about emotional. Let's give a little definition of emotional deprivation. Emotional deprivation means I am eating this particular food, right? I'm allowing myself physically to have the cupcake, the whatever, but I'm not like living in acceptance of it or like really okay with the fact that I'm doing it. What happens when we're not living in acceptance is that in our minds, our brains, we think to ourselves, oh gosh, I shouldn't be doing this. This is wrong, right? Implicitly, the implication is, if I think that I'm doing something wrong, is that I shouldn't do it tomorrow. That starting tomorrow, I'm going to deprive myself again. And this is a really big deal because I think 90% of binge eating is actually a reaction to this implication of tomorrow I'll get it under control. Screw it. Today I might as well eat everything that isn't nailed down. Right. And you don't even need to have that conscious thought, like the conscious. I think a lot of people do have the conscious thought. Screw it. I screwed up. You know, I've gone bad today. My eating's gone all wrong today. I might as well eat everything that isn't nailed down and just stuff myself silly. And tomorrow I'll start again being good, whatever that means. I think a lot of people do have that conscious thought. But what they don't realize is that just by having shame around food and not living in acceptance around food, right? And not being okay with your food and your body the way it is, the implication is that tomorrow your food should be different. So the implication is I should get it all in now, even if you're not having the conscious thought. So that's also sort of like a big aspect of my work is really understanding these very specific subconscious connections between shame and lack of acceptance around food and binge eating, even when your physical needs are being met. And also I think that, you know, on a very simple level, and I think most of you will understand this as soon as I say it, I think there's also something to be said. There's also this sort of middle ground where, you know, let's say your physical needs are being met, but you're at a party and you just want a cupcake because Like, it's a celebratory, fun thing to do that's pleasurable and feels good. But you tell yourself, oh gosh, no, I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't eat the cupcake. That's wrong. That's eating emotionally. Right. Then what ends up happening is you're denying your desires, even if they aren't physical. You're denying you're defying your emotional, like, desires, basically. And that can have sort of this similar effect on us as far as just like animal instincts, right? Like, if I'm sitting on my hands trying not to eat, it's kind of like hanging off the side of a cliff, like trying desperately not to let go. At some point, I'm going to let go and I'm going to fall very far, right? And it's like the harder we cling to try not to do something, the more we're gonna, like, the harder we're gonna fall when we do eventually crack or break. So I think that, you know, those are sort of like the three main ways that deprivation in different forms, there's a lot of, basically the point here, the overarching theme here is that there's a lot of different forms, both physically and emotionally, that deprivation can take. But deprivation overall is what I believe causes binge eating specifically, or is how I really define binge eating, rather than some, like, just pure emotional eating, which could be as simple as like, oh, I'm bored, I'm gonna have a cupcake and like leave it at that, no big deal. No shame, no guilt, whatever, just a cupcake, who cares? Usually, you know, lots of normal eaters have that perspective around food. Like, normal eaters do not just eat food for fuel always, no matter what. Like, that's completely just not true, and not realistic. But it doesn't spiral into these like crazy binge eating episodes because of these layers of emotional and physical deprivation are not there for normal eaters. Normal eaters, they just don't give a shit. It's just like, okay, whatever, I had a cupcake, who cares? And then it ends, as opposed to sort of escalating into this, oh God, I ate a cupcake, maybe can I have one more? Should I not have another? Oh God, I screwed up. Forget it, I'm just gonna eat the whole bag.
Yeah, well, now I've really blown it and I'm never gonna be able to do this again, so I really need to eat the rest of the cupcakes, because I love that point about how even if you're like physically eating enough of what your body needs, just the definition of like what I'm doing is wrong. Yeah, it's like this is a theme that I see so often of just like, no matter, you know, what you're doing, if you know you're going to have to make up for it in the future, like, you know, however you're living your life right now, well, someday I'm really going to have to go on a diet. Someday I'm going to have to be smaller. Just like the cloud of someday it has to change, like, that drives that feeling of deprivation. So like, two people can be eating what they need, but one might have, you know, like you said, that emotional you know, aspect of the deprivation, and just that mind shift. So I want you guys to just see a few themes here that, like, Isabel is talking about. She's talking about the animal instincts, right? It's like, you know, our language in this world is, you know, like the chatter, right? Like, it's your animal brain. It's like these messages that come from like that deprivation place. It's your survival brain, right? So it's the hold on so tight, you know, if it feels like you're going to die, like if things feel like such a huge deal, it very much like brings up these sorts of like, not just deprivation, but like, we've got to do something to survive because this deprivation is happening, whether physical or emotional. So that's really awesome. Can you tell us a little bit, like, how do you help people work to get rid of the emotional deprivation, because, or like alleviate, or like, what are some simple steps you can take towards that? Because physical deprivation, okay, you need to eat to nourish your body. We know how to do that, more food. So how do you do, like, so on the emotional side, like, what are some steps in that direction?
So emotional deprivation is really about eliminating shame, guilt, and accepting your food for what it is, understanding that you are not going to be able to eat perfectly all of the time. Like, it's just unrealistic. It's not going to happen. Like, your food, to some extent, is not fully in your control by virtue of the fact that it is impacted by things like emotions, which are out of your control. It's impacted by physicality and biology, which is out of your control. This myth that human beings are fully in control of what they eat at all times is A, not true, but B, we're not supposed to be fully in control of our food all times. Food is an instinct, right? And I don't just mean on the physical, like, I'm hungry front. Like, it's instinct. Our instincts are impacted by a lot of different things, including emotions, hormones, all sorts of stuff. It's complicated. That's the point, right? So given this reality that our food is not totally in our control and probably never will be. When you accept that, right, and start to stop judging your instincts around food, that's really the key to eliminating emotional deprivation. Emotional deprivation is essentially judgment or shame or feeling of I shouldn't, or this is wrong, or I should be getting this under control. All of those thoughts that are really based in this delusion that I should be in control of my food and my food should look a certain way is really what constitutes emotional deprivation. So let's talk about essentially what you're asking me is like, how do I eliminate those thoughts, right? How do I eliminate the shoulds, the shouldn'ts, the judgments, the lack of acceptance, the feeling like my food should look different than it is? That really is about, there's a couple things. In addition to, there's a certain level of just like understanding that diets don't work, right? And that trying to control your food through willpower does not work, right? Like just statistically speaking, there is no weight loss solution that has ever worked for more than a tiny fraction of participants ever in the history of the world, right? Like we have not figured out a single way to make everyone thinner, right? So the question just becomes, if I accept that fact, if I start to live in acceptance of the fact that my food might never look how I think it should look, how do I start to make peace with my food looking the way it does? Which is, and like, obviously this is like some, you know, immediately when I say this, people say, oh my gosh, but I'm binging, how can I accept that, blah, blah, blah. What's ironic about it, and you and I know this, is that the more deeply you lean into acceptance, the less binging happens, right? And your food, it doesn't look like it's in your control. It doesn't look the way necessarily you think it should, but it starts to look more like even keeled. It starts to look more like, oh, I'm just gonna have a cupcake when I'm bored, rather than 10 cupcakes because, oh shit, I fell off the wagon, right? And so ultimately, acceptance around food and how we cultivate that happens in direct proportion to acceptance around body image, in my opinion. There's something to be said for the fact that I think some women have sort of moralistic ideas about what their food should look like outside of the construct of weight or outside of body image. But for the most part, like 95% of our judgments around food are directly related to this feeling that like my body should look a certain way. If it doesn't look a certain way, it's my fault. I am in control, full control of my body, and I can make it look the way I want to look. No, you can't. You probably can't, right? I mean, that's probably why you're here, because you can't.
You can so try. You can certainly try. I mean, like, I know for so many years, I really thought of my physical body as a direct reflection of my ability to control my food. Like it was like, hey, calories in, calories out. If I have an extra pound, it means that I need to up my control. You know, it's like, and yeah. I was able to, for a short amount of time, manipulate my body to be smaller than its natural self. But I was an insane person, totally disordered with eating. And it, you know, those things don't last. So like, I love the points that you make, like, you have these ideas.
I think that's the key point that we need to like really hammer home for people, is that like attempts at control with food are pretty much always going to be short-lived. There is no permanent solution. There's no permanent control over food. Like no one really achieves permanent control over their food in that way. Hence the phrase diets don't work, right? So I think that that key phrase of like long-term, like short-term, I can control my food. I can do it for a day. I can do it for a week. I can do it for a month, maybe even a year. But like by the time, I mean, just statistically speaking, like 95% of people can't maintain a diet for more than 2 years. And the thing that's really interesting about dieting in particular, and so when I say dieting, I mean any attempt at forcible weight control, right? Like this, I'm using dieting as a broad sense, in the broad sense of that word, to mean like, I'm going to try and control my food to make my body look this way, to forcibly control my body size. The thing about dieting is that the more you try to do it, the less time the less capable you are usually being able to do it. Meaning I used to, when I was younger, I could stick to my diet for 6 months before I fell off the wagon, right? But as time went on, with every subsequent diet attempt, my ability to stick to a diet would get less and less and less. And eventually I just get to the point where it's like, I couldn't even go a day without binging my face off. Right. And this is sort of the trend that we see with dieting. It's not only that diets don't work, it's that they stop working in a progressive fashion, meaning they get harder and harder. It gets harder and harder to control your body the more you try, which is adaptive. Again, it's a really great biological thing. Like, your body is trying to not starve to death. Good job, right? That's what it's
so good. Like, keeping you alive. Like, you know, we've evolved this far because we are descended from the people who like stayed alive, obviously. So it has like all these mechanisms. And I think that's such a great point. And like, you know, maybe you last a certain amount of time, you know, you last before you fall off the wagon. I know all these things are things that we can dive into, but like, you know, either you fall off the wagon or your body throws you off the wagon. Like, I know, you know, with disordered eating, one thing that comes up is like I didn't know what it felt like to feel full, and I didn't know what it felt like to feel hungry. Like, your body just starts like turning off switches that are going to like give you this, you know, illusion of control. Like, your body will just be who it is. Like, the ability to like eat and like let your body show up how it naturally is, I think, is a way of happiness, but like you said, like kind of scary. So just taking away, like you said, like the shame, let's talk a little bit about the body image piece of it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we talked about with the emotional deprivation in general, bringing that down. I know that one scary leap for me, and I hear this from a lot of women that I coach, is, you know, the scariness of it just not being okay to have a bigger body. Like, you know, whatever the craziness is now, at least it's better than like a bigger version of myself, which I think is a very, like, it's sad to admit that so many of us have felt or feel that way, but it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. So how do you suggest people move toward like a body acceptance of themselves or others or whatever it may be?
Well, I think before we talk about body acceptance, we also have to debunk this myth that it's a choice. Like, to be thin and miserable or to be fat and happy, it's not really a choice. Because the reality of the situation is that most people, again, if you fundamentally understand that diets don't work, you are probably not suppressing your weight by a substantial amount through dieting. In fact, you are probably making yourself bigger over time, right? Like, over time, as you diet more and more, your weight is going to likely go up on like an average graph scale, right? So if you think about like a graph where your weight is going up and up and up, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down, you know, I'm dieting, I'm binging, I'm dieting, I'm binging, I'm dieting, binging. When you're on the diet binge cycle, which essentially means when you're weight cycling, the trend is not that you just stay up and down on a straight line like this. It goes like this, right? You're getting hot, your weight's getting higher over time as you're dieting. It's not getting lower. So first things first, let's just debunk that right now, right? Like, dieting, it's not, the choice is not to diet and be crazy, but like, at least I have a thin body. Dieting actually is probably making people's weight go up in the long run over time for most people, right? I mean, that was certainly my experience over the 15 years of my dieting career. Over time, I was getting, you know, sure, I would like lose weight and gain weight and lose weight and gain weight, but over time, I was getting fatter. The trend was definitely to get fatter over time, over the long run, rather than thinner, even if I did have bouts of being able to lose weight for short periods of time. So I think that that's, I mean, one thing we also understand is that dieting severely fucks up, and I hope I can use that word.
You can use any word. It's my channel.
Right, yeah. It severely screws up your like metabolism, your weight set point, right? Like, evolutionary from a biological standpoint, you are designed to hold on to weight if you are in threat of starvation, which is essentially what diets are doing to your body. Like, your brain doesn't know the difference between you being starved in a Holocaust versus like you starving yourself because you think that you need to look like a Kardashian or whatever. You know, so your brain, like, you biologically, your body doesn't know the difference. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's like number one. Like, for me personally, like, I think about it as not like, oh, I'm going to, you know, like, just get happy with, you know, gaining weight and being bigger. It's not just that. It's also realizing that like my prospects, if I continue down this diet yo-yo train, are to probably only get bigger and continue to binge eat over time. So really what I'm doing is cutting my losses, right? it's basically saying, like, if dieting is like gambling, right? And I'm losing, instead of doubling down and potentially losing more money, I'm just gonna cut my losses right now and be like, you know what? Like, I lost some, I didn't get rich like I thought, but it's not worth putting more energy into this. Like, it's certainly not worth putting greater investment into this. I'm gonna get out right now before shit gets worse. So I think that that's step one for me. For, like, personally, I mean, we can talk, there's so much body image work to do, and, like, we'll talk more about it in this conversation. But I think step one, when we talk about acceptance, let's really get into what acceptance actually means. It means looking at the facts and realizing that this shit doesn't work, right? Like, dieting, there is no option of, like, well, maybe if I try, like, this other thing, I'll, like, magically get thin, or, like, maybe if I just, like, read this book, this time it'll work. It's, like, essentially what you're saying is, like, okay, every time I've ever tried, shit has gone really badly for me. I've ended up losing in the long run. Things have gotten worse for me in the long run. I'm going to cut my losses right now and just be like, okay, this is where my body's at. Like, I'm like, let me just get out. I need to get out of this game before I make shit worse for myself.
Yeah. That's a really, really great point. But looking at the facts, I love that. just to punctuate that, like, this is, you know, just some questions that I ask people.
Yeah.
One is, how is that working for you? And
right.
Two is it serving you? Like, I think that sometimes we get stuck in this idea, like, oh, well, if I could just stick to, you know, whatever you're trying to do to lose the weight at the same time that you're maybe trying to fix your eating disorder, you know, whatever it is, like, you know, well, if I just stuck to it, it would work. So look at the fact. Are you sticking to it?
Right.
And the things that you're not sticking to that make you eat worse do worse for you than just not sticking to them and doing this other thing that isn't within that cycle. So
exactly. Yeah,
looking at the reality, just like, okay, what's actually happening as opposed to this pie in the sky? What could happen if I did this thing that I've never done before, which is do a diet perfectly forever, you know?
Right. So, most of my clients who are most effective with their body image work and really, like, do the work to change the way they feel about their bodies and, you know, have done so only because they first got to the point where they realized that dieting and, like, attempting to lose weight for the rest of their life indefinitely and never succeeding was not a train that they could go down anymore. Like, they gave up. Right. And people think that giving up is a bad thing. Like, giving up on something that is never probably going to work, that has historically never worked really for any, you know, substantial portion of the population, is not a bad thing. What it's doing is it's opening you up to a different solution, which might actually have a better chance of making you happy, right? Like, I am so much happier in body acceptance than I ever was just diet binge cycling, hoping that one day I would get thinner. You know, it's, like, so silly. It's like, I think people, you know, in this particular context, giving up is not a bad thing. It's actually, like, you're cutting your losses. Like, that's smart. Like, that's, like, how smart investors manage their money. That's how smart, like, gamblers work. You know, like, it's basically, like, knowing when to call it quits and move on to a new strategy. Body acceptance is a new strategy for creating happiness in your life that dieting and attempting weight loss has never given you and probably won't ever give you long term.
And I just want to say, like, for those of you who are thinking of this, like, it's not an easy thing. I mean, probably not. I know that for me, it was very difficult. Like, I was, like, in tears many a days, because I think there's, like, this mourning point. Like, you're mourning the idea of what your body could be. And then you're just saying, you know what, like, I can't have that. And I can't have it insanity. And I can't have it long term. So you cry and you mourn. And it's like, you know, this thing that you care about in your life dying, but you can't move on as long as you are, like, stuck in it. You know, it's like the idea of Santa Claus, like, okay, spoiler alert for anyone who's, like, still believing this, but, like, you know, believing in Santa Claus may be a nice, fluffy, wonderful idea, but, like, there's a certain point where it may serve you to give up on that to be a grown up. Like,
100%, 100%. Buying into dieting and continuing to try to, like, control your weight through force is effectively like believing in Santa Claus. It's like, okay, go have fun, like, continuing to do that. And it's hard because everyone's telling you that it's real. Like, that's the hard part, is that there's an $1 billion industry lying to you about your prospects for long-term weight loss. And like, oh, if you just do this, I promise you'll get thin. And it's just a lie. I mean, like literally, like if you ask any actual researcher, they will tell you, like, there is not one study, one academic study that demonstrates substantive long-term weight loss results via any method for more than a tiny, tiny fraction of participants. So tiny, in fact, to basically render them statistically negligible. I mean, effectively, it's like, we know that this is a Santa Claus. There's just so much money behind trying to convince you to like keep running on this treadmill, right? Like they know, like, especially it's like, as you know, and we'll talk about this, but like, because there is so much rampant weight discrimination in our culture, and because so many people are being oppressed on the basis of size, and so many social rewards are given to women and men, but let's just stick with women. So many social rewards are given to women who effectively lose weight, even if it's just, you know, we, because of these things, because of all these social ramifications, which really drive our desire to lose weight, right, as these greater social forces, because of this, it's so lucrative for people to continue to tell you, I can get you this, I can make you thin and everyone will love you and unicorns and rainbows will pop out of the sky.
Yeah. And look at the industry, you know what I mean? It's like, industry is like any industry is based on making money, and weight loss is money. Like being satisfied where you are, people who are satisfied don't spend money because they have to fix something. Yeah. So, you know, if you release, you know, a whole horde of monks into a shopping mall, like nothing gets bought because they aren't looking for more stuff. So realize like there's an incentive. It's not some sort of like moral or virtuous, like people are saying be thinner because, well, you know, like fixing whatever it is, convincing you that you're not okay the way you are makes money. Cause if not, you just put on your clothes and you go out the door, you know?
100%. I mean, this is a huge, huge, it's a huge, huge problem. And it affects everything. It affects our medical industry. I mean, like now, like it wasn't always that weight loss was like a big medical concern. Now it's become sort of a bigger medical issue. And what ends up happening is like now the money that's involved in obsessively trying to make people thinner is now reached our pharmaceutical industry, you know? And so it's just like, it's so complex, the levels about which there's such a huge financial conflict of interest when it comes to media, medicine. I mean, like just, it really pervades so many of the industries that affect our lives on a daily basis. Like we're getting it from all angles, and there are pretty much no persons who are giving us these messages that aren't in some way biased by the financial incentives for the weight loss industry. Like pretty much everyone is affected by it.
Or just, you know, the ideas that are out there. I think there are a lot of really well-meaning people that just believe something is truth because they've heard it, you know, it's around, you know, it's like, but just think of our history as a country. There were a lot of ideas that were around that everyone believed that now we're like, how did anyone ever believe that? So, you know, just like don't take a popular idea as a true one is one thing to think about. And I know that this is probably going through some people's minds. So I would love to hear your perspective, Isabel, on the kind of the differences between, okay, so I'm not motivated by weight loss, like I'm giving up on the fairy tale, like I'm just gonna, you know, like let my body show up. The difference between like that and, you know, avoiding that essentially, and then like health. Like the pursuit of like having a healthier body and a longer life. And like, how would you suggest like, first of all, like what do you see as the differences there? And then how would you suggest one pursuing something that would actually serve them in that aspect?
Yes. I love this question. This is one of my favorite questions because by and large, when I give my spiel about like, okay, we need to take weight loss off the table because PS doesn't work. everyone says, well, okay, but I need to lose weight for, not everyone, but I'll always often get, we'll get questions like either I need to lose weight for health reasons or flip side, I don't necessarily need to lose weight for health reasons, but like, I don't even know what health means outside the context of weight loss because our whole like way that the entire health and wellness industry kind of revolves around weight loss because of all of the financial reasons that we described, right? Like what ends up happening is you have people like Dr. Oz, or you have people like, you know, any of these, like, you know, I'm trying to think of like other, I don't even read these people's stuff anymore, but you get the joke. Dr. Whoever, who's like selling their stuff on the internet. Generally speaking, like, they know that what I think a lot of them start off really just wanting to help you like adopt healthier habits, right? Like, we know that like moving your body on a regular basis like improves your cardiovascular health and like was probably one of the greatest leading indicators of like lifetime longevity. We know that balancing your blood sugar is probably a really good way to prevent diabetes. We know that, you know, eating more fruits and vegetables is going to create more regularity in your system. There's like a million obvious benefits to more eating fruits and vegetables. We know that these things are good for you. We know what sort of healthful habits are. And it just so happens that I think a lot of people sell healthful habits as, you know, do X, Y, Z and then lose weight because they'll sell books doing it, rather than just do X, Y, and Z because you'll be healthier, right? Like, I eat pretty well, right? Like, I eat like a pretty healthful diet. Like, I'm very like conscious of what I eat for health reasons. I work out on a regular basis. I sleep well. I manage my stress, right? Like, I do all sorts of things for my health. But I don't expect or anticipate that my weight will change because I do those things. And I don't make doing those things about my weight. Now, a lot of people, which is really, really important for a lot of reasons, because when you start to incorporate quote-unquote healthful habits for the weight loss, you're much more likely to get involved in this sort of diet binge cycling thing, right? Like, if you are failing at your weight loss goals, you're going to perceive yourself as failing, you're going to fall off the wagon, you're going to end up just cycling, as opposed to just worrying about just doing things for health with no physical outcome, like without looking at sort of your physical appearance as an indicator of your health, you're much more likely to stick to those healthy habits. So here's the thing. Is that being healthful is healthful whether you lose weight or not. In fact, people can be healthy at a lot of different sizes. Like, that's the reality of the situation, is that like we have diverse bodies in the world, right? Human species come in various sizes. And the what actually is important as far as like cardiovascular health and you know, diabetes prevention and things like that is, are you taking care of your body at whatever size it is, right? Are you managing your blood sugar? Are you eating fruits and vegetables? Are you moving your body on a regular basis? You can be doing all of those things and be various sizes and be healthful, right? So like, there are people who are thin, who are very unhealthful, right? Who don't move their body at all, live a sedentary lifestyle, don't eat fruits and vegetables, or, you know, just drinking soda all day long, not balancing their blood sugar. And then there are people who are bigger, who are doing all of those things, who are working out on a regular basis, eating fruits and vegetables, you know, generally like eating a pretty healthful diet. And the bigger person who's doing healthful things actually may have better health than the thin person who's doing unhealthful things, right? Like, the reality of the situation is that a lot of our cultural understanding of the connection between weight and health has to do with correlation rather than causation. Meaning, if I am drinking soda all day long, I might be heavier than the average person in society, and I also might have diabetes. It's not necessarily true that being bigger makes me have diabetes, so much as there's this third thing called drinking soda all day long or not balancing my blood sugar that may contribute to both, right? So it's kind of a little bit misleading when people say obesity causes diabetes, for instance. Obesity doesn't necessarily cause diabetes so much as not balancing your blood sugar may cause both, right? So Linda Bacon, who's a really famous researcher around weight and health, and she's like she's one of my favorite people in the world. I quote her all the time. She basically says, focusing on weight as like a proxy for health, basically, is kind of like focusing on the color of someone's teeth as a proxy for their lung health, right? So, you know, saying that, you know, if we like look at the statistics on people with lung cancer, we're probably going to find that a lot of them have yellow teeth, right? Makes sense, right? We could decide, oh, people with lung cancer also have yellow teeth. Yellow teeth must cause lung cancer. I guess yellow teeth cause lung cancer because a lot of most people.
Bleaching for everyone. Whiter teeth.
Yeah, teeth bleaching is clearly the way to prevent lung cancer. If we just bleach everyone's teeth, we're going to prevent lung cancer. As opposed to realizing that, like, oh, there's this third thing called smoking that contributes to both. The yellow teeth is like not really the issue, right? Like smoking may increase your risk for lung cancer, and it may be such that smoking increases your risk for yellow teeth also, which is, so there's like a little bit of like a connection there. But ultimately, to make the assumption that yellow teeth causes lung cancer is like absolutely ridiculous. And we understand that. And that's effectively what we're doing with weight. We noticed that basically weight and diabetes, right? Higher weights and diabetes. I'm using diabetes as an example, but you could use this for cardio health. You could do this for various different things. We see this correlation between diabetes and higher weights. And we sort of jump to the conclusion that obesity just directly causes diabetes and that the way to cure diabetes is to make people thinner. And the reality of the situation is like, it's just sort of like focusing on the yellow teeth. It's like, why are we even bringing the weight into the conversation? Why don't we just start focusing on like getting people to like balance their blood sugar and like eat healthier foods, right? Which the reason why this is so important is because eating healthier foods won't necessarily make you thinner. In fact, in a lot of instances, it won't, right? In some instances, it will. But in a lot of instances, it won't. There are tons of people who manage their diabetes by just changing their diets and eating more fruits and vegetables, working out on a regular basis, balancing their blood sugar, who don't even lose that much weight, right? And so that's why this is such a critically important thing to understand. It's sort of, it's taking away this idea that our weight is the sort of like major villain here. We're like villainizing the weight as opposed to villainizing the underlying cause. And why that's problematic is, well, one of the many reasons it's problematic is because in focusing on weight, like one of the problems with focusing on weight is A, we don't have weight loss techniques that work. Like they just don't exist, right? The diet binge cycle just, it doesn't work, right? Like, I mean, most people can't like diet away 100 pounds permanently. Like most people just can't. And they're spending all their time trying to, usually getting involved in the diet binge cycle, usually weight cycling up and down, which ends up making them more unhealthy, which really, it's like, if we had just told them like, hey, don't worry about the weight, just start adopting healthier lifestyles. Just start like, you know, working out on a regular basis, moving your body, managing your blood sugar, like do things that actually we know are proven to change health outcomes, and stop making it about the weight, because making it about the weight is actually inhibiting your ability to make healthful choices. It's actually screwing up your food. It's actually making you unhealthier.
Back so yeah, to deprivation, right? So we've come exactly. Full cycle. Yeah. And that's exactly. Any woman who comes to me with a goal of weight loss, you know, one thing that I say up front is like weight loss. I don't coach weight loss as a goal. Like yeah. If you want to put some healthier habits into your life, the right. Most that weight loss will ever be is a side effect. It's going to be like, oh, this thing happens. It may happen for you. Like when you're putting these healthier habits into your life.
And it may not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it could go either way. And I remember like, you know, I have a good friend who's a personal trainer. And back in my crazy days, I like showed him this picture of this woman. And I'm like, how do I make my body do this? Right. And he's like, why do you want that? I'm like, I just want to be at like the peak of health. Right. And he's like, well, I know. Right. Like this,
that's bullshit.
This is my crazy days. So he's like, well, okay. So you need to, first of all, she's airbrushed. He's like, first of all, second of all, you need to choose. Do you want to go for appearance or do you want to go for health? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, some people will put healthier habits into their life and weight loss may happen. But then there's a certain point where you have to choose to set aside health to get to that lower body fat percentage. You know what I mean? Because like that isn't a natural place for me. So I just thought that was, you know, a fun way to kind of illustrate like it, they're not the same thing. No. And then I love the idea of just like let's treat our bodies well, like do healthy things if you want to, but it's your life, it's your body. You don't have to, but like if you desire health, like you could put some healthier habits into your life. But then just let your body show up. Like it is such a different dynamic to, you know, work out or eat a piece of fruit or, you know, get good sleep because of just you want that in your life without expectation. Like I love thinking of it like a relationship, right? It's like you're not with your partner because you're like, hey, I'm going to treat this person well because I expect this and this and this of them. It's like, hey, I'm just going to treat them well because I love them. And then whatever shows up and they're going to be who they are. And like our bodies are the same way, right?
Oh my God, that's so true. And I think you're right. Like not enough people even think about relationships in that way. I'm just starting to learn about relationships in that way. I'm like, wow, it's the same.
There you go.
So true. And I think, yeah, letting go of expectations is super, super important because ultimately what ends up happening is that like, if for some reason we don't lose weight or our expectations aren't met, we like go bonkers. Like that's like the beginning of the craziness. And that's really the beginning of the diet binge cycle for a lot of people.
And for anyone thinking like, hey, my body really is like, I know that my weight is like, and I don't know that you know this, but if you're thinking it as you're viewing this, like your body's not at a healthy weight, just ask yourself, like, do you have a great set of healthy habits that you're practicing? I think it's more likely that you, like if you have this extra weight and you are eating less healthy actually because you're trying to lose the weight, right? It's like the things that we binge on are not like, okay, well now I'm going to eat fruits and vegetables adequately. You know, it's like, well now we're actually going to eat lower quality food and higher, you know, abnormal, you know, quantities than we would have because there's kind of this looming, you know, deprivation. So what if you took the deprivation away and you just live those healthy habits and then see how your body shows up over the next year. And then like, don't even care that much about it, you know, let's just see what happens.
Right. And the reality is like, and we have to also, yeah, we have to be conscious of like what the definition of healthy weight is in quotes, right? Because I think that this is an area where the mainstream medical establishment does not necessarily get it right. Right. Like BMI is kind of like a bullshit thing. You know, BMI literally, like the definition of what healthy weight is, like changes depending on just politics, like on a regular basis. Like they're just like, we're just gonna like decide that like this percentage of people are fat now because like maybe that'll motivate them to go to the gym more. So be very conscious of that, right? Like you can be healthful at above a BMI 25. I just want to like put that out there. But to your point, I mean, I think that that's like a really good point. It's like, you don't, in my opinion, this is where I got to at like the height of just like my crazy binge eating and like, just like meat and like really the point where I started to let it go was realizing that like, I don't have a choice, right? Like dieting doesn't work. Trying to make restrictive choices for weight loss doesn't work, is probably never going to work, has not worked in like however many years, 15, 20 years, whatever, for women that I coach, it's even longer than that. I don't really have any other options other than to just focus on making myself as healthy as I can in the body that I currently have and just seeing what the hell happens. And maybe I'll lose weight, maybe I won't, but like really what are my other choices, right? Like again, like I think embracing this way of thinking really relies on making the decision and like really coming to the understanding that dieting for weight loss is not a sustainable option. So like what's plan B? Plan B is, I'm just going to take care of my body and like stop trying to force it into a certain size box and just like see what happens. Maybe I'll lose weight. Maybe I won't. I don't know. But I do know that forcible like diets for weight loss, A, don't work, and are B, probably making me fatter in the long run.
Yeah. And just building this trust, like it's incredible to me, like as women kind of let go with the right or wrong about food or like the I have to about food or the shame or whatever it is, like it's amazing to see. And I know that it surprised me too, like how much your body will tell you, like when to eat and when to stop and what to eat. Like a lot of people are like, well, you know, how am I going to eat? I need a meal plan and I need, you know, like a structure. Well, I mean, do you? Like when we take all away all the stuff, like our bodies are meant and created to survive. Like building that sort of relationship with your own body where you like listen to like, oh, that's right. Okay. I guess I am full. And those things disappear when we try to like force, right? Like you back to like the tighter you hold on, you know, or, you know, the harder you fall. Right.
Mm-hmm. So. Totally.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, is there anything that's just kind of like on your mind, like a burning, like we miss this thing. People need to know this. Anything, I don't want to leave without any like loose burning ends.
No, this was good. We had like, it was a good fiery conversation. I'm excited. I think I've like said what I needed to say here. And I hope I've given your people, your like wonderful audience, your tribe, a new perspective and sort of a little bit new information that maybe they haven't heard before or thought about in this way before.
I love it. Oh, wait, there is one thing. I wanted just like you to share a couple of the practical things like for like body acceptance, like kind of getting used to or like feeling more friendly or accepting of like what our bodies might do, or like if our body was bigger or just other women's bodies, like what are some just quick things that women can do to like inch toward that direction?
Wow, we didn't even really talk about body positivity. So like once you get to the point where you're like, okay, this is what I'm working with, this is what my body looks like, diets for forced weight loss probably don't work, like how do I like get comfortable with where I am and like practice body acceptance? So I would get involved in body positive communities as much as you can. Unfollow weight loss people or anyone who you think might be lying to you about your prospects for long-term weight loss, because I probably guarantee you that they are. Start following body positive people, right? Like get on Instagram, start following. There's so many interesting, I know that you liked this from Summer Innocence podcast. There's so many interesting, like just plus size models and like natural or curvy models who are offering visual images for women to look at that are different than what we see in the media. I mean, one of the big problems with low self-esteem and low body confidence is that we literally just don't see our true bodies if they are, you know, above a size 4 being represented in the media, which is a huge problem. And so one of the ways that we can combat that is to start actually looking at images of people online in the media who have bodies more similar to our own. Do not underestimate the power of this practice. It is a huge, huge, huge big deal. In fact, I think that's the only scientifically, in quotes, scientifically proven way to change a person's body image is to actually have them look at visual images of people who are their size or bigger on a regular basis, right? Like the more you are exposed to visual images of people your size or bigger on a regular basis, the more comfortable you're going to get with your own body type, right? One of the big reasons we're not comfortable is because we don't see any role models of people who are our size, which makes us feel isolated and like we're not okay the way we are. So that's awesome. And just get involved with body positive media as much as you can. Eliminate like unhelpful like weight loss media. And start following body positive people. Like there are so many great websites, there are so many great coaches you can follow who are body positive. I'd say like a lot of my favorite digital women's magazines now are like exclusively body positive. Like Refinery 29 is like a great magazine. Like I know Kelsey Miller, who's the head of the Anti-Diet Project there, like they have gotten rid of a lot of body negative terminology in their writing altogether. And like they're just like a lot of great women's magazines have awesome body positive journalists now. Like just get involved in the body positive community, particularly online. There's so many resources for learning about body positivity. And make a practice of like just shutting out messages that you don't need to hear, right? Like messages that make you feel bad. You know, one of the amazing things about social media is that you actually do have some control over what media you're consuming. You can go through your feed on Facebook or Instagram or whatever and just unfollow people who make you feel bad and start following people who make you feel good exactly the way you are. And that would be my first suggestion to you. Also, check out my video series. That's a good place to start also. Sign up for my emails. I'm always sending emails with suggestions and sort of fun tips and facts on how to change your relationship with your body and food in general.
That's beautiful. I love that. Yes. And I've seen your video series and I get your emails and she has really great stuff. And we'll put links below with that. And thank you. I'm so glad that I remembered to touch on that. Like we just got into such a great conversation. Like, oh, that's right. Like we should just like, you know, at least wrap up with that. And I've had my own experience, like that's probably been the biggest impact just in my own life for body positivity is I would seriously like set an alarm in my phone for the evening and then just like Google search like plus size models. And I would just like lay in bed and scroll and like look at beautiful women who were like my size or bigger. Like I just realized any woman that I saw before that point where I'm like, she's so beautiful, like impossibly thin for what I could ever do with my body. So to like have more examples, there just really are so few out there. I'm like, oh, there's like all of these images that I just don't see pop up in, you know, the feed that I was in at that time. And that made a really big, big impact on me. Beautiful.
Cool.
Thank you so much for being on, Isabel Fox and Duke, you guys. So, so awesome. We'll link to all of her stuff below. And thank you so much for being a guest today. Such a fun conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Talk to you guys soon.
Awesome. So remember, I will link to her stuff in the show notes. An audio of this will be out in a little while as well. So go ahead, check out her website, her video series, her emails. If you guys want to connect more with other interviews, I have a weekly video series as well. This is just like a great, I think, so needed message. It's just like, hey, like, let's just stop being crazy around food and be okay with our bodies and happily ever after and enjoy our short little jaunts here on the earth. And it's all good stuff. So thank you again for being on. Thank you guys for watching or listening. And this is Lydia Wente, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!